I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and you're listening to The Takeaway. The year is 2071. The Earth is largely uninhabitable, and a crew of bounty hunters is moving through space on a ship called Bebop.
I think it's time to blow this scene, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
This is the cult classic anime series Cowboy Bebop. Part science fiction, part neo-noir, with a splash of slapstick comedy, the series follows a ragtag group of bounty hunters called Cowboys as they track down fugitives across space in a dystopian future.
3 days ago, there was a big shootout between his group and a rival syndicate. He killed his own guys, then took off like the wind. Word is he's hiding out with some sweet thing in Tijuana.
TJ? That place is for small fries.
Yeah, well, this small fry is worth $2.5 million.
Having originally debuted in the late 90s, the wildly popular anime series is now getting the live-action treatment, thanks to Netflix. The series, also called Cowboy Bebop, debuted on Friday and stars John Cho as the lead, Spike Spiegel.
Who are you?
Just a humble bounty hunter, ma'am.
Spike's fellow bounty hunters, Jet Black and Faye Valentine, are played by Mustafa Shakir and Daniela Panetta.
100,000?
Yeah. Barely covers fuel. Never mind food.
I thought you said this bounty was gonna go up.
Well, it did. Tanaka's worth 1.5 million. But we got charged for half the casino floating out into space.
Hey, it's not our fault somebody brought a disruptor to a robbery.
Adapting animated stories like Cowboy Bebop into live action is no easy task. Anime especially, since it has a pretty unique visual and storytelling style that doesn't always translate well with live actors. That's according to Shirley Lee, staff writer covering culture for The Atlantic. I recently spoke with Shirley and with Jeff Yang, cultural critic and co-author of the forthcoming book, Rise, a pop history of Asian America from the 90s to now, about the new live-action Cowboy Bebop series.
Cowboy Bebop is cited perhaps more frequently by people of a certain generation as kind of their on-ramp to anime, their real first taste of Japanese animation, and the thing that addicted them to the medium, to the genre, right? It is an almost impossible to describe sort of amalgam of different genres, sci-fi, Western, neo-noir, and slapstick comedy. And it has some indelible characters. It is funny and dark and really kind of deeply layered and emotional. And it's a cult classic.
Okay, so that language that you use about how it is funny but also dark, it's incredibly like sexually frank in certain spaces. Shirley, it always feels to me like part of what makes those things work together in the context of anime is that it's in fact animated. So I'm kind of wondering about how a live action adaptation of that can work.
Well, often it doesn't work. It is a risky and really hard endeavor to transform anime into live action. I mean, anime, first of all, is inherently hard to adapt because it has such a precise visual style. I think anyone who has watched any series about a magical girl or a heroic little boy will notice how super expressive their facial, you know, characteristics are. The character designs are often really kinetic. That's not something you can really translate to live action. You have these realistic and lush backgrounds, sure, but they contrast with this, again, this seamless expressiveness of these characters. And so I think when you adapt it into live action, you can mimic the aesthetics. You know, think of the Wachowskis, for instance. But the storytelling of anime, as Jeff mentioned, is different. Cowboy Bebop is especially different because it's about adults living out adulthood, and you have a lot of ambiguity and these self-contained conflicts instead of one overarching conflict that's driven by, you know, a good set of characters versus a bad set of characters. You're seeing characters cook and take baths and trim their bonsai trees and looking out the window, and there's this feeling of melancholy and mystery that I don't think live action can translate really well. And it's just really hard and it's risky to do.
One might think that it would be easy because anime is meant to sort of give us these strong signals for what like an emotional moment is, or but that stylized aspect of it does seem hard to then translate back into the live action. I'm wondering, Jeff, what you think is gained and what you think may be lost in that translation. And then we want to get into a few other things, but I'm just interested in sort of what we lose, but also maybe what we gain by going to live action.
So I've never really been somebody who has this sort of orthodoxy, this deep and abiding religious, sort of dogmatic principle on keeping interpretation of a work authentic to the original. I think that canon exists to be improvised on. Like jazz, which of course is one of the biggest reasons, I think, the soundtrack, the music, that informs Cowboy Bebop's incredible popularity. If you're going to make something new, you want to make something different and not just something that reiterates what's on already existing in two dimensions. That said, I think that in some ways, the challenge of adaptation of anime is that anime just is told in a storytelling style that defies what we expect in many cases in Western storytelling. It doesn't have the same kind of beats or story arc. It doesn't have the kinds of conclusions for characters that we expect. And as a result, sometimes it can be very just discordant and jarring to people who are consuming this stuff for the first time in live action without knowing what the antecedents are, right? And for people who've actually seen the original, you have that anxiety of influence, that constant comparison. I mean, we saw that at the very beginning when people started just showing off costumes and casting and the embedded fan base for Cowboy Bebop just exploding in fan rage, right? So I guess what I would say is you always gain something. It may not be something good, but you're seeing something new when you do an adaptation. I think when you lose, when you go from 2D to 3D though, is you lose in some ways that perspective of suspension of disbelief that we automatically bring to animated characters. We give, I think, a little bit more leeway, more elasticity to how stories are told in animated media than in live action, and certainly here in the West. And as a result, I think you're always going to have some disappointment.
So I love this language of the interpretive aspects and the right to interpret, any work of art, right? And to create something new in this decision to create, that it's not, in fact, just translation, right? That maybe translation is the wrong way to think about it altogether, but instead it's a reading and a retelling in, with all of the newness or difference that retelling might bring. But Jeff, your point about people already having a set of expectations, especially if this was their on-ramp, right? So for a certain kind of generational moment, right, this on-ramp into this particular form. So surely beyond the question of whether or not it is in and of itself as a product, good, bad, right, wrong, how do you think people will feel about it? And maybe in different categories, maybe folks who come knowing something and those who don't.
Yeah, I try to think this way when I was approaching the screeners, humble brag, just from a perspective of what if I had never seen the anime? Am I getting, just a great story? Am I getting a great performance out of these actors? It is really hard to erase your memory of the anime. And I think the show, if you have never watched any anime at all, you might be able to appreciate this show. I do think that this show has been structured in a way to fit Hollywood storytelling, as I was saying before. And I'm not the first to observe this by any means, but it's kind of like the difference between watching a Miyazaki film and a Pixar film. One will, in its storytelling structure, prioritize this idea of space and gradual change and interiority in its characters. Pixar, on the other hand, is very conflict-driven, and it's a subtle structure that makes all the difference. So if you have seen anime, maybe you'll watch this version and you'll feel like there's something uncanny about it, as far as the comparisons go. But if you had never watched any anime and you just watched the Netflix version, you might not have that uncanny feeling. You might feel like, oh, this is a fun story. This is basically a space Western rather than the space opera that you get from the anime.
I want to talk about the music. I want to talk about the sonic aspects, Jeff. When you brought up the point of jazz and the important ways that that the sonic, because we've been talking a little bit about the visual and even the way that plot and story are kind of driven or sort of represented. But talk to me about what it sounds like.
One of the things to really note, and this is true actually of the live action as well, in the sense that they did bring back the original composer, Yoko Kano, to do the score for the new score, actually, kind of a brand new sonic landscape for the Netflix series. But Yoko Kano created the soundtrack and the indelible audio space for the original animated series. And what's really interesting, if you know a little bit about how the show was created, in many cases, she looked at early sketches, looked at early breakdowns, created music, and then after seeing later stages of the animation, actually created new music, which then Watanabe, the director, essentially altered the scenes themselves to reshape around her, altered soundscapes. And so as a result, it really was kind of like a jazz process, riffing off each other in a way that I don't think is very common in animation, where any changes are expensive, and especially changes that are reflecting what might seem as whim. But the music is so incredible. From the very beginning, that sort of completely unforgettable music that accompanies the opening credits. Cowboy Bebop has music in its name and music in its soul. And even the style of storytelling very much feels like it's designed to reflect its musical forebear, if you will. It definitely has a sense of almost being improvisational in parts. It definitely has a feeling of allowing each of its characters to almost serve like instruments, kind of stepping forward, then stepping back into the chorus. Really hard to describe it without having actually watched all 26 episodes, to people who haven't watched all 26 episodes. But over the course of that one season, you really do feel like you've consumed, like an album.
Shirley, just on a last question here, what could this mean? What might this Netflix series mean for Hollywood and anime? And do we want Hollywood to be doing a lot of particularly live action anime?
Oh boy. I'm actually kind of torn on this. As Jeff was saying earlier, I also feel this way, where it's kind of like, if we want to take influences from, global products. Oh God, that sounds so corporate. I think you know what I mean. And riff on them. I think that's the beauty of art, right? And I do think this adaptation probably comes the closest among the graveyard of Hollywood live action adaptations to capture the spirit of the original. Like, the showrunners, the creatives, the team clearly respects the original anime, but they are also inviting these comparisons that we've been going through because they lean so heavily on what fans remember of the anime. So how do I feel about the future? I'm still wary of any announcement such as the one about the live action adaptation of Your Name that's in the works, that's stalled. I this is not Japanese anime, but Netflix's ongoing production of the live action version of Avatar The Last Airbender makes me kind of wary, even if the casting is really great. It's just a medium that is so risky to translate when it comes to Hollywood storytelling. I think Hollywood really likes to package whatever story that they found and to make it just purely action-driven, black and white, good versus bad, and that's why Netflix's Death Note didn't work. That's why the 2017 Ghost in the Shell didn't work, for among many other reasons.
Many other reasons.
You know, that's why Dragon Ball Evolution was a travesty. You know, I just think the problem that we've seen when it comes to turning anime into a Hollywood live action product remains the same. Hollywood consistently tries to reshape the storytelling structure. And I think if there's a way to move beyond that, I think maybe we could really see some riffing that is inspired instead of rote.
Shirley Lee is a staff writer covering culture for The Atlantic, and Jeff Yang is a cultural critic and co-author of the forthcoming book, Rise, a pop history of Asian America from the 90s to now. See you both soon, Space Cowboys.
See you, Melissa.
See ya.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.